You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
All right, let's go. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com, Seattle Sports app. Good morning. It's already bright and sunny and beautiful out. How about that? It's like summer out there. I mean, not quite, but it's still nice. It was beautiful yesterday. I'm a happy guy. The Mariners get a win, and a subject that I usually find incredibly boring isn't that boring this year. How about that? So, yeah, lot to do
today. Mariners win can do for your mood, Mike.
I know. Look how happy I am today. I also went to bed a little bit early. I'm not going to lie. I turned the Mariners game off in about the seventh. I had one of those, you know what? They're up 5-2 or 5-3, whatever it was at the time. Just like, if they blow this game, I don't really want to see it at all. And I'm tired and I want to go to bed early. So I got myself up into bed. I didn't even check the phone to find out if they won, which I usually do. Often, so my dad has the Larry Salk rule. My dad's name is Larry Salk. And we're going to get to my family a little bit today because it is my mom's birthday. So happy birthday to mom.
Yeah.
Who listens almost every day on the stream and is very upset that in the 9 o'clock hour on the app, the picture turns to Jake and Stacy. And she thinks that any issues we may be having with ratings or digital downloads or anything like that may be due to people being confused.
People can't see your face.
Right by the picture, they can't see the beautiful face that she helped create. So congratulations to my mom, another birthday today. But my dad, Larry Salk, who you guys have heard on the show before, hopefully he came on and ranked desserts and, you know, something he's an expert in. So he, years ago, created what has become known as the Larry Salk rule. I think he named it that, which is... Well, I don't remember who else would have named it that other than my dad. But the rule states essentially that when your team is during the regular season, not during the playoffs. I want to be really clear about this. Not during the playoffs.
Okay.
During the regular season, when your team is up at the end of a game and the closer comes in for either the top or bottom of the ninth, you should turn the game off. That there is no upside in watching it. That all of the outcomes are fairly negative. Either he closes out the game, and you're like, yeah, that's what he was supposed to do, and you go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Or he blows the game, and your team loses in the ninth inning, and now you're super mad, and you have to go to bed, but you're super mad about what just happened in the game. Or they tie it up, and then they go to extra innings, and then you have to stay up too late, and that screws you up for the rest of the week.
Okay.
So there's no upside. The only upside you would have is that there's some sort of a back and forth great game that you miss. And my dad's thought on it is, it's the regular season. It's one of 162. You get over it. So I think it actually kind of makes sense. So I've been, at times I will employ the Larry Salk rule. Harder to do when you work in the business and talking about what happened becomes sort of a crucial part of the game. But just the way that game was going, they didn't really deserve to be where they were. And I was just like, you know, I'm just going to turn this off because if the baseball gods come back around, I don't really want to be a part of it.
Don't deserve to be because of the errors?
I mean, they didn't hit the ball very well, and yet they somehow managed to turn it into five runs. I mean, there were four errors, seeing eye singles and bleeps and bloops and everything else that you could possibly have in a game. They had one double in their 11 hits, and that was the only extra base hit. I mean, like, it was just one of those games where everything turned their way, which they deserved because plenty of other things have gone against them this year.
True.
So, you know, I just turn that game off. Just kind of go do your thing somewhere else.
Well, you said you're going to get to this later, but you said you wanted to see the dominant Robbie Ray outing. How'd you feel?
I felt like it was great for four innings.
Oh, yeah. The fifth inning has been a rough
one. I saw a really great dominant long reliever. I mean, like, Robbie Ray has been fantastic except when he's not been.
It's been the fifth
inning
more than once.
I thought you were going to be happy with us.
Me too. 11 strikeouts?
I love the strikeouts. And that was, honestly, that's a huge.
Was it 11 or 10?
It was 10 strikeouts, I believe, in 5 2/3. He was fantastic in terms of getting swings and misses and everything else that we were sort of promised with Robbie Ray, we got for four innings last night. I don't know what the heck happened in the fifth. He's spiking balls and all, you know, two out walk and a fly ball, and then he spikes to him. I mean, they weren't really able to do any damage to him. So in that regard, I thought we saw a really, really good pitcher. But it is just amazing how all of the sudden it just completely, like, leaves him and then comes back again. So, yeah, no, it was a lot closer to what we've been expecting from Robbie Ray. I was, for the most part, really happy. But, you know, again, dominant Cy Young Award stuff is 7 innings of 1-run ball, right? Not 5 2/3 and you give up a pair.
Yeah, I mean, the second run to me doesn't really feel that. I wasn't upset about it. I was like, so you get the Segura tag at first, which is just a good base running play, mm-hmm. and then 2 spiked balls.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it wasn't a quality start. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm not trying to just be negative about Robbie Ray. I thought he looked much better than he has. And so just from an eyes perspective, right, that was the Robbie Ray that I've wanted to see. Dominant fastball, throwing 95. The strikeout he had where he blew 95, forget who it was, he blew 95 by him. I was like, oh, all right, that's Robbie Ray. In addition to the 2 different types of sliders that he throws, like I thought we saw something much more like what I've been expecting to see this year. But it is interesting how just the, you know, some days he doesn't look great, and then all of a sudden you look up and you're like, man, that's a quality start. He just went 6 2/3 and only allowed 3 runs. That's bizarre. It didn't look that way. And last night was sort of the opposite, where you're like, okay, he looked dominant at times. He looked like the pitcher that they went out to acquire and spend big money on. And then you look up at the results at the end and you're like, really? Only 5 2/3 and a couple of runs? Like, that's not a quality start.
Yeah,
so
everything's going your way.
Then along comes Debbie Downer. You think that's Debbie Downer? I'm gonna tell you about a new disease, a car accident, or killer bees.
Beggar, spare you, Debbie, please, but you can't stop Debbie Downer. You started off like the sun's out, the birds are chirping.
Yeah, they are.
And then we were like, yeah, and Robbie Ray had a good start. And you were like, no, absolutely not.
You're like, 10 strikeouts, 5 innings, not good enough.
I mean, it was okay. It was a good start, but let's not get carried away.
You have 2 hits.
Yeah, and how many runs?
2.
All right, well, he only went 5 2/3, so that's not a quality start. It's not quite 5 and dive, but like, all right, come on, Robbie. I'm not down on him or anything. Sheesh. See, this is what gets me in trouble. Like, I am happy about what the Mariners did last night, and I was happy about Robbie Ray's performance. But when people try to exaggerate it and turn it into, oh, there you go, there's the old, like, well, let's not get carried away. And then I look like the bad guy because I'm not jumping up and down like a cheerleader over it.
None of us said that.
Yes, you did.
I know.
You both did.
I asked, did you think he had a good day yesterday?
And you said, did you think he was like back to being dominant Robbie Ray?
I said, you wanted to see a dominant Cy Young outing.
And that wasn't it. That was a really good outing, not a dominant Cy Young award. So now I'm Debbie Downer because I don't think it's a dominant Cy Young award. Sheesh.
Actually, you know, you can't win for trying. This person is Debbie Downer. 425 says, yeah, Robbie Ray's pants are starting to annoy me.
Oh, well, that's ridiculous. Between the pants and the grunting, Robbie's great.
I love that.
And I really enjoy watching him pitch. So I really don't mean to come off as negative about it. I thought he was very good and better than he's been and excited about the signing and all that. But I'm still waiting for that, like, you know, he completely dominates a game, goes deep into it, and you're like, yep, there's the stopper. But at the end of the day, they needed a win. He got them a win. He had essentially, what, he had perfect game stuff for 4 innings yesterday. I mean, he can't look much better than he did. He just unfortunately threw too many pitches, and it kind of, I think, got him in trouble eventually.
And
the
strikeouts just snuck up. All of a sudden, I was like, what, 9?
Yeah.
Whoa.
I mean, again, that slider, the fact that he can throw it so well to both righties and lefties, it really just changes who he is as a pitcher. So, as I said, the one other thing I said I would get to is, maybe we'll do it here in Need to Know. There is, today is a day that I usually don't care about. And it's one of those days in sports radio where you're supposed to care about it. And I can kind of fake it or whatever, but generally I don't care at all. There is one reason why this year is different. And I'll tell you why in Need to Know next. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, the Mariners decided to pay homage to a legend last night. It was, Maura, we were just talking about him, Wee Willie Keeler, who once said, keep your eye on the ball and hit them where they ain't. Well, the
you
Mariners
were talking about him. I said, who?
Well, there you go. I'll give you more info if you want it. The Mariners did exactly what he suggested, a lethal combination of bloops, swinging bunts, seeing eye singles, and kind of just waiting for the Phillies to just kick the ball around. It wasn't pretty, but it did work. Finished with 11 hits, only one of them for extra bases, forced 4 errors, led to 5 runs, and gave Robbie Ray a pretty good cushion.
The 2-2. Swing and a miss and a slider for strike 3. 12 in a row set down by Robbie Ray, and that is strikeout number 7. Holy smokes, what a performance.
Yeah, got himself into a little bit of trouble in the fifth. Had 10 strikeouts in 5 2/3 innings. But other than that inning, he really was dazzling against a very good lineup. Mariners win 5-4. Some day baseball today. Logan Gilbert on the hill. 12:40 first pitch from T-Mobile. Wee Willie Keeler, by the way, Mora, took his own advice very well. Hit 341 for his career. He had a total of 33 home runs in 19 seasons. He was also 5'4" and choked up almost halfway through the bat. It's crazy to watch. Anyway, there you go. Another piece of news today. Unfortunately, not really a lot of fun. Ryan Divish on with Jake and Stacey yesterday. Kind of an unofficial announcement or piece of news here on Mitch Haniger's ankle. It's not great.
You know, Mitch Haniger, it's possible that he's out 12 weeks total. When I talked to him, it was sprained bad enough that it bone bruised on the side, on the high level. You just don't get back from that. And we've seen how much torque that Mitch puts on his body when he swings and how hard he goes. I just don't know how long that's going to take to get him back. You know, he's still in a walking boot. Typical for a grade two, between a grade two and a grade three sprain is 12 weeks. And to play at maximum levels, that could be that long. I mean, 12 weeks without Mitch Haniger is a long time.
That's a really long time. That's 3 months. I mean, you're looking at after the All-Star break before you'd get him back. So keep that one in mind as you try to, you know, look at what's going on with Jared Kelnick and what they might need in their outfield.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, well, I thought today was schedule release day. I might have read an email not exactly correctly. And so I have a whole need to know planned about how you need to start preparing for the schedule to come out today.
I'll take some ownership here.
But it's not till tomorrow. So I'm just going to cut and paste this sucker tomorrow. I'm just going to let you guys know that right now. Here's what we already know. Russell Wilson and the Broncos are definitely coming. We just don't know when. Opening week, maybe. That could be a primetime ESPN Monday night game. You got to imagine whatever it is, folks are going to be interested in that dynamic. We know Bobby will be back with the Rams at some point. We know they'll play the Bucks in Munich in November and that their bye week will come right before Thanksgiving. But could they then play a Thanksgiving Day game because of that? That's a possibility. And we know that there are going to be 3 Christmas Day games. So could the Seahawks be playing on Christmas Day? So that's another question we'll find out. And then finally, we do know that there's a lot of travel. Do you realize the Seahawks will travel? Do you know? Have you heard the number?
No.
29,446 miles, to be precise.
Oh.
By contrast, the Steelers will travel fewer than 6,500 miles and never leave the Eastern time zone.
So we travel 5 times more than the Steelers.
Yeah.
To all the time zones.
Yes, just about. Well, part of that is because you got to go to Munich, right?
Yeah,
like, that's
sorry.
A bit of a...
that's an outlier there.
But yeah, that's the difference between what the Seahawks have and what the Steelers have this year. So we will find all that out, not later today, but, you know, tomorrow.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, NHL lottery last night, kind of a weird quirk, but despite finishing with the 3rd worst record in the league, the Kraken actually had the best odds of landing the number 4 pick in the draft, and that's exactly what ended up happening. Montreal had the best luck, they'll draft first. Devils slid into the number 2 spot, which pushed Arizona to number 3. Kraken end up 4th. All right, there's not really believed to be like a generational type talent available this year, a Connor McDavid or a Sidney Crosby or anything like that. Like that, there's no one like that in this year's draft, but there are probably 2 players that stand out above the rest, so they likely won't be available for the Kraken. Nevertheless, there should be some really good, high-quality players available in the 4th spot. Ron Francis believes they'll be okay.
Yeah, no, we feel pretty comfortable that we can get guys in the probably top 5-6 that could step into the next couple of years. So, we feel there's a couple players that step into this year's lineup probably in the NHL. Whether they get to us at 4 and we're able to pick them or not remains to be seen, but there are talented players in this draft.
Yeah, but unfortunately, you know, a year in which they could really use some superstars doesn't sound like this is it. But if they have another year like this one, next year there's believed to be one great one. So see what happens. The Kraken struggle like they did. There may be a reward for that on the way. 2 blowouts in the NBA last night. Miami over Philly by 35. And Phoenix just squeaks by Dallas. They only win by 30. NHL, Hurricanes, Blues, Leafs, and Kings. All win, all lead, 3-2. It's everything you need to know, and something you won't need to know until tomorrow. How about that?
How about that? Did you join the outrage in what happened yesterday with...
Oh. With what?
Anything.
Yes, I was outraged.
Was there a fight? I was there.
I was definitely outraged, of course.
The Adam
On Twitter, yes. In fact, I tweeted with some all caps. Oh, what is this about?
Well, there was a lot of people who seemed to be upset about whatever happened in first base with Adam Frazier. I didn't see it happen live, so mm-hmm. I had to go back and watch the clip in hindsight or in after the game.
Yeah.
And I was trying to figure out exactly, A, it's not reviewable, right? So whatever,
I don't think
so,
because they didn't review
it. Was.
Right.
And he didn't swat the glove of the first base of Schwarber. Not Schwarber.
Right. Of Hoskins.
Hoskins. Yeah, Hoskins. He didn't swat the glove.
No, so I think here's how I understand it. There's a couple of ways in which he could be ruled out. One would be if he deliberately smacked the ball out of the glove like A-Rod did in the 2004 ALCS to Bronson Arroyo. We just told the story the other day of how it caused my dad to lose his mind and throw all of his dishes into the sink, breaking everything that was in there already. So, yeah, it was not that. I mean, clearly he did not intentionally knock that glove. Two, he could be running in a spot that would prevent a throw, but that was not the case. So, like, if there's a bunt and you kind of
you have to get
out of the way, it's up to you to get into foul ground rather than even to stay in the base path. And that was definitely not the case. The only case that could be made, I think, is that he held on to the ball long enough to basically complete the process of the catch, if you want to use a football term, and say that it was, you know, on the after swing or something like that. Kind of like if it was a transfer play at second base on a double play, right?
Yeah.
They'll say, no, you got the out, and then you drop the ball on the transfer. But there's no transfer here.
Right. As I was going to say, it's the same thing as a play at the plate. Like, if you get... and knocked, and the catcher goes to the ground, he's got to hold on to the ball.
Right, exactly. So I think this would qualify the same way, is that it's just like the catcher who used to hold up the ball at the end, because they don't have as many plays at the plate anymore, obviously, just based on the rules changes. But there are still moments where that could happen, and the catcher's got to hold it all the way through contact with the tag. Mm-hmm. In this case, there's no tag, right, because his foot's on the bag. But he still apparently has to hold the ball all the way through. I don't know. I guess that would be the only argument, is that because it's not a tag play, it's just a catch. It is a little funky. I will say this. I thought they got it right. I think he's safe. But I think the reason it's funky is that on the transfer, right, when they say you drop the ball on the transfer, they have a lot of leeway.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing how short a time they will say a second baseman or shortstop has the ball. And they're like, oh, no, it's on the transfer. And you're like, I feel like he only had that for like a split second, whereas Hoskins had it long enough to sweep his arm all the way around. But I think they got that call right, don't you?
I agree. The transfer one is funny, but you're taught, even as middle infielders from kids growing up, you don't really close the glove on the ball.
Right.
Like, that's a stopper.
Right.
Like, it hits your glove.
And
that
sometimes
should be
even you use the back of the glove, right? You catch it with the back of your glove in your hand.
I've seen some infielders that have never closed. They fold it out, like, backwards.
Yep.
To make sure he can't be lost in the pocket.
I just thought the play was done and he was out. That's what they said on the Phillies broadcast. Because I looked it up, like, am I crazy, after I talked to you guys this morning?
Based on what? What was their reasoning, though?
Just had
like
to
they were like, he's out, and then the ball gets knocked out.
Right, so they just think it's a timing issue.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think you got, I mean, again,
they're like, oh yeah, you got him, and then you see the ball come.
Well, I guess, the only way that can be true is if it's different than what happens on a play at the plate where you've got to hold the ball all the way through.
Yeah.
And by the way, the same is true on a steal at second base, right? If you have the ball in your glove and the guy comes sliding into second and his foot accidentally hits your glove and the ball pops out, he's safe. You got to complete the process of that. That's always been the rule on a play at the plate, but I just don't know how it works on a non-tag play. I'm going to assume that the umpire does, which is why they got it right and why Joe Girardi got tossed. He was mad, too, by the way.
I was going to say, whenever a manager gets mad or tossed, there's got to be a pretty good argument.
And you know I love Scott. I'm a huge Scott Service fan. He doesn't get tossed with the same anger that some other guys do. Mm-hmm. Scott doesn't, because he's got the dad thing going. He just doesn't, he never looks as angry as like a Joe Girardi does.
I want him to get tossed on the Torrens. When Torrens got tossed.
Yeah, I mean, I think at that point, like, he got tossed over Julio. Like, he's had his moments so far this year. But Girardi was super mad. That was a good one. I like a truly angry manager in a spot like that. All right, coming up next here, we'll come back to that maybe a little bit later. If the Seahawks do and did get their two picks right, it could really change the entire outlook for not just this season but beyond. Joe Fan will join us, explain next. Mike Salk Show on Seattle Sports on 710.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports Station.
All right, Joe Fan with me as he is every Tuesday at 8 o'clock, and this hour driven by Waste Car Ford. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Mike. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm good. I'm glad you're still talking to me. I was worried this Tyler Henry post was going to be too much. I was looking at this poster while I was at the Snoqualmie Casino the other day, and I thought he was like some sort of a country singer or something that I didn't know of. And he turns out he's some Hollywood medium, and I thought you looked like him in the picture, but then Morris set me straight with some other pictures.
Yeah, no, I didn't see it. But, you know, credit to you for taking that shot, and you just took the L on that one.
It wasn't supposed to be a shot. Honestly, the picture I thought looked like you. But then,
I was like, no, I've seen that guy before. He looks nothing like Joe.
Yeah, the other picture.
No, I don't mean like a shot like you were trying to be insulting. I just mean a shot like, oh, is this a thing? And it was, no, it wasn't a thing. It wasn't a thing at
all.
So
you don't think you looked at all like him in that picture?
I mean, like, the dude's white and, like, puts gel in his hair.
There's more than that. All right. I'll take the L. Maybe we should go back to 7:30 and I'll take the L in retrospect. Joe, how are you? The story here over the last couple of days has been these rookie tackles, right, and what they've done in rookie minicamp. Honestly, being out there, they stood out. I mean, Abe Lucas especially stood out. Just looked the part, you know what I mean? How much can you reasonably expect from a pair of rookie tackles?
Well, I think you can expect a decent bit. I mean, you see offensive linemen have success during their rookie season all the time. So, yeah, I don't think it's, you know, will they be the best players in the league? No, I think, you know, you look at like a Creed Humphrey. Now he's a center, not a tackle. And that's not the norm for someone to step in and be the best at his position in the entire NFL. But I do sort of feel like, you know, and we talked about this when we were discussing the Charles Cross pick, is, you know, I feel like offensive linemen, especially top tier players, I mean, they have higher floors than, you know, other positions, and it's a little bit less volatile. That doesn't mean to say that everyone hits, obviously, but
yeah, no, I think all of that makes sense. And you know, talking to Joe Fan here, as we do every Tuesday. Sorry, go on.
You know, so I think it's fair to say that these two guys could be day one starters and you know, potential bookends for years to come.
So I've been going back and forth on the Baker thing, and I cannot come up with anything that over the years that I've vacillated on more than this. I can talk myself into Baker, and I can talk myself right back out of it again. Are you able to sort of stay on one track with him?
And I feel really confident in that. I just think as long as you're not going after Baker Mayfield with the thought that you're not going to be then looking for a quarterback next year, then I think that's okay. You know, I think if Pete Carroll's telling himself that the Seahawks are going to be a competitive potential playoff team this year, then Baker Mayfield certainly helps you get there, you know, more for, you know, it's more foreseeable that the Seahawks are a playoff team with him than with Geno Smith or Drew Lock. I respect that they feel like Drew Lock has some untapped potential and he got a bad shake in Denver and all of that. Fine. But you still haven't seen enough to say, what is the real ceiling here? Like, is he going to give you a couple good spot starts, or is he really going to be a season-long starter and be successful and be able to keep DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett happy and all that? So, I'm in on Baker Mayfield if the price is right and you're still viewing him as kind of a stopgap between whenever you can, you know, dip back into either, you know, a big-name quarterback in free agency, which probably isn't likely to happen. They're likely to go the draft route, but yeah, you know, finding a quarterback in the draft that you project to be your next franchise QB.
How's your Mariners' patience right now?
It's waning, certainly. You know, seeing them get their butts kicked at home, you know, and I guess it hasn't been like every game, but there's been a handful now. And, you know, the non-competitive games are frustrating when you say that, all right, okay, they beat up on a couple of bad teams at home to get off to an 11-6 start, but it's been pretty ugly since. And there's been a couple heartbreaking losses, but beyond that, I mean, they're just getting beat, and they're getting beat fairly handily. And, you know, there's a lot of things that you say, okay, is Jesse Winker, he's got to come around. He's just too good of a hitter not to. But, you know, how long do you just say, okay, well, it'll come. Well, it'll come. It'll come. And I get the, hey, it's a marathon take. But at the same time, you know, this is a team that just doesn't get much benefit of the doubt, you know, in this city with its fan base, nor should it. You know, they've taken too many swings and misses. They still have the 22nd ranked payroll in all of baseball. That, you know, they've had too many prospects kind of come and go and not really amount to anything. So, yeah, I would say the patience is still there because it is early, and I do believe, you know, there's upside with this team. But yeah, the lack of depth is frustrating. You know, seeing Abraham Toro bat leadoff or be your everyday DH because Mitch Haniger has been out, you know, is hard to watch. But yeah, I'm trying to stay level-headed about it as best as possible.
Would you feel better if they had spent money on Chris Bryant and he was hurt right now? Or if they had spent money on Trevor Story and he was being as unproductive as he's been right now?
Yeah, certainly, because at least at that point, you're trying, you know? Yeah,
I'd feel worse about that. I'd be much more upset. You have eight years wrapped up in a guy who can't play?
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't predict the future. But at the same time, like, what are you reasonably supposed to expect from a team with the 22nd ranked payroll in baseball?
Well, I think the problem is you're equating payroll with overall talent. And I think when you've got a lot of players that are still within their first 6 years in arbitration, just the way baseball system works, I don't know that that's a payroll concern. Could they have done more to add payroll? Yeah, they tried to, right? They tried to add Trevor Story. They tried to add Chris Bryant. They looked at adding another pitcher. They weren't able to get any of those deals done. But, I mean, okay, they could have a $25 million added to their payroll, and Trevor Story right now with his negative 0.5 war, would that make us feel better? To me, I would be more upset about that.
But there's also like a systemic issue there of like, okay, you tried to get those guys and they didn't want to come to sign with your ball club. And I feel like that's a recurring theme we've heard year after year, which at some point that has to change. And so, yes, maybe they dodged a bullet with Trevor Story, but that issue, that thought in the back of your mind still remains of, okay, then next offseason, they know specifically they want to get a big arm and this big, you know, are they going to be able to do so? So yes, if we want to talk very specifically about Trevor Story, fine, maybe they dodged a bullet, but another left-handed bullpen arm, another quality, veteran bat or two, you know, to add to the depth of the lineup that just isn't there. You know, I think it is fair to say it, and maybe it's just, you know, no team has depth, you know, the way we want the Mariners to have depth, but it does feel like they could have done more. And, you know, again, I'm not jumping off the bandwagon. I do believe in the potential here. But, you know, I think it's how many times is Jared Kelenic going to hit a home run and we say, okay, maybe this is it. Maybe this is it. You know, at some point you just want to see it and not just have to rely on hope and potential and just purely having faith. And so, yeah, I think they'll turn around. I think the biggest thing is that they care. You know, I think this is a team that gives a damn, and I think that means a lot because we've watched a lot of apathetic Mariners teams in years past. And so that's another reason why I think my patience is hanging on, because I know these guys want to get it done. But yeah, there's certainly frustrations as every Mariners fan has.
Joe, good stuff. As always, we will continue this debate, I promise, and hopefully when we meet again, things will look a little bit better. But good stuff. You can follow Joe at Joe_fan on Twitter and his new YouTube page.
Yeah, just decided as a hobby. You know, it's fun chatting with you and, you know, once a week and all that. But, you know, why not as a hobby? I got some time on my hands and just, you know, post some different musings and have a medium to talk about Seattle sports outside of just Twitter. So yeah.
Where do people find it?
Yeah, if you just go to my Twitter page at Joe_fan, it'll be pinned right on top.
All right, there you go. Two N's in fan. Thanks, Joe. We'll talk next week. Joe joins us every Tuesday at 8 o'clock. Great stuff and love talking to him. Even though I disagree a little on this, Chris Bryant has a negative war. Marcus Semien, rather, has a negative war. Who else were we just talking? Trevor Story has a negative war. So three of the players that they were rumored to be in on and wanted are negatives right now for their team. They're a net negative. The team would be better off not running them out there than having them out there. And oh, by the way, Brian's hurt. I mean, like, yeah, okay, it would be great if they spent more money, but spending is not necessarily an indicator of success. I think his other point about maybe adding some extra bullpen help is a valid one, but that's where it's up to Jerry to determine when and if you need some of that stuff. And if they do, you can go get it. But do you want to throw more, you know, are you willing to throw more at the product right now? Yeah, I think those are all fairly real questions that they're going to have to ask themselves and try to figure out. So Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710seattlesports.com as well. Thanks to Joe Fan. Again, joins us Tuesdays at 8 o'clock, and then you can hear that Wednesday morning at 6:30 as well. So I'm going to shift gears here a little bit. We'll come back to the Mariners at 7 o'clock. I want to talk a few minutes of football, and I kind of want to run you through a couple of pieces of sound here, because we spent some time yesterday and we talked a little bit about it there with Joe, you know, Baker Mayfield versus sort of your current crop with Drew and Geno, and some national folks have been all over this. I think we've mostly heard kind of the anti-Geno and Drew sentiment, right? We played you some Marcus Spears this week where he's outright laughing at the Seahawks for trying to sell anybody on the idea of this quarterback room as being like worthy of anything. Yeah. I mean, he's literally laughing out loud and like making fun of the very idea that they could roll out either Drew Lock or Geno Smith. So, all right, that's sort of one side of the spectrum. Let's sort of look at the other side, because not everybody feels that way. The Seahawks aren't the only ones who are you know, pro Drew Lock or pro Geno Smith. Here's D'Angelo Hall, who played in the league not too long ago, and he's much more excited about Drew Lock.
You know, when guys walked in my locker room and kind of carried themselves or acted like their game on the field was better than what it really was, it always kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And I just think Baker Mayfield's kind of one of those guys. Until he really understands who he is as a player, you know, he's not going to really be able to maximize who he is and what he's able to do on the football field. Can Drew Lock make every single play? No, he can't. But at the same time, I think Pete Carroll has a plan. They want to run the football, get back to what they were doing defensively, and just taking those shots. And so I think Drew Lock is the best option. And I just think, like I said, Baker Mayfield, it just comes with so much more baggage.
Well, he's definitely right about that. There's a lot more baggage that comes with Baker, we think, right? I mean, that seems to be sort of the hot rumor. He just said Drew Lock can't make all the throws, but he's a better option. So, I mean, you can kind of take of that what you will, right? Like, it's sort of, you know, it's sort of like my Robbie Ray thing from last night. Like, yeah, he was good, and I'm looking for him to be better. And this is like, yeah, you know, he can't do everything right, but he's fine.
So his knock is mostly that he's just, like, overconfident?
On Baker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he essentially...
Until he knows who he is,
right,
he shouldn't act like that.
And I kind of understand some of that. I think he's referring more to his personality off the field, what he's like in the locker room. You know, I understand that more in terms of the gunslinger thing of, like, I can make every throw, and then you try, and it doesn't work, and the next thing you got four picks in the game, and you're not just not giving your team a chance to win. If you're going to do that, you better be Brett Favre. You better be that kind of crazy talented, where in addition to the four picks, you throw eight touchdowns or something,
uh-huh,
right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, the game has obviously changed, and that sort of gunslinging mentality has kind of gone away. When the next thing you hear is he can't really make all the throws, but he should be fine for what the Seahawks want to do, that may be some of the answer. The other part with Drew Lock, and this may be why the Seahawks are so, you know, adamant and really trying to build him up and talk about how great he is, and I've heard this sort of, you know, talked about a little bit, is maybe he needs it. Maybe that's part of the key, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just needs some confidence.
Somebody believe in him.
Yeah, just needs a hug. Right? Like, and who better to do the hugging than Pete Carroll, right? And if you've been in Denver and you've been beat down, you know, emotionally and mentally the way he has, you know, being a quarterback's hard. Certainly being in the spotlight's hard. More, you could speak to what it's like doing it in Denver with the kind of fans that they have there. You know, it's not necessarily being like, you know,
constantly being compared to John Elway.
Right, exactly. And for him, I'm sure Peyton Manning as well, right? I mean, that's your life. Is you get compared to those guys full time. It's like being the starting goalie in Montreal. It's like playing baseball in Boston, New York. I mean, like, you are constantly under the microscope there. So maybe there is something to the idea of bringing Drew Lock away from that environment and immediately trying to build up his confidence to try to get the most out of his talent. I was kind of saying gunslinger is a bad thing. Steve Smith will disagree with me and say that Drew Lock's got some of that, and it's a good thing.
Drew Lock is a young man coming out of Missouri. that you understand exactly what he was. He was a gunslinger. He would try to put the ball in places that he shouldn't. That's a great attribute. That attribute is called confidence, right? It's hard to believe in someone if that individual does not believe in himself. He believes in himself. I believe Drew Lock is a fantastic quarterback. I think he is much better than the draftees because he is more of a finished product.
Oh, there you go. So he says he calls him a fantastic quarterback.
I'm assuming when he says that's an attribute, but he says you're forcing the ball places it might not need to go, that he thinks you probably need to hone that, but it's good that the confidence
right.
is there.
Yes, I think what I hear from him is he was a gunslinger in college. That's great because it shows that he wants to, you know, have that confidence, et cetera. But yeah, obviously you can't do that in the NFL because you just throw too many picks. And now you got to get the confidence back. So you kind of see a kind of broken Drew Lock, right? A guy that once had some of this talent, confidence, et cetera. You get to the NFL, you take away the gunslinging, which has to happen, and then you destroy his confidence with kind of a lousy, mean-spirited coaching staff. I understand the narrative here and how you can write it to make it look like Drew Lock is on the verge of maybe breaking out a little bit. You know, Steve Smith continues to blame those coaches in Denver.
Now, it has not been gone well in Denver for him for a lot of different reasons. It's not necessarily Drew Lock can't play football, but at the same time, there's a new head coach, a new offense coordinator, new defense coordinator in Denver for those very reasons, and Drew Lock was not primarily one of those reasons. He was just part of the problem. Now he gets a new lease on life and a new career to show that maybe it was not him, maybe it was the regime prior to. So it gives him every opportunity to show what kind of quarterback he was in college and what he can be in the pros today.
Look, I can buy that narrative. I can certainly understand how the guys in Denver, you know, messed this thing up, and there's a reason why they're no longer, you know, head coach Vic Fangio's, they've moved on, etc. Like, I get that. I also watch Drew Lock play, right? And so yeah. It's really kind of hard to ignore the eyes, ignore the numbers. And usually when the eyes and the numbers tell you the same story, there's some legitimacy to that story. In order to believe that Drew Lock is better than your eyes have told you and better than the numbers have told you, you have to believe that the talent is there and it's been misused in some way. Right? You've got to believe that that coaching staff was so inept, so negative, so down on their second round pick right from the start that they completely ruined his career. Maybe that happened. I mean, it's certainly possible. There's a lot of sort of not poor, I shouldn't say poor coaches because they probably have a great skill in terms of scheme or whatever the case may be, but just don't understand how to lead and how to manage people. I think there are people like that all over the NFL who get overpromoted. We've talked about this every year.
Yeah.
Hey, who should we hire to be our head coach? Well, get the best offensive coordinator. Okay, let's do that. Well, is he good at head coaching? Don't know, but he can really scheme. All right. Sorry, NFL players turn into like fuddy duddies from the South or something. I don't know why that happens. They like turn into what's the cartoon Sam? What's the guy's name?
Yosemite Sam.
Yeah.
Or a little Foghorn Leghorn.
Yeah, exactly. They turn into Foghorn Leghorn as soon as they don't like quarterbacks or something. But
do you believe some of what Michael Bumpus told us yesterday that Drew Lock is more moldable and we've already seen the best in the ceiling of Baker Mayfield and we haven't of Drew Lock?
No.
Okay.
I don't believe that at all. I thought it's an interesting point. I don't agree with it in any way, but I like the point. Yeah. I mean, I understand what he's saying, that maybe there's a little bit of truth and that you can mold him, but I'm sorry. Like, in a vacuum, I'll take a number one talent of Baker Mayfield over what I've seen from Drew Lock. He's just more talented. There's a reason he was the number one overall pick. There's a reason he got the Browns to the playoffs, which they hadn't sniffed in forever. Like, all of those, you know, the toughness he played through last year, even though he, you know, couldn't do everything he needed to do with the bad shoulder. No, I like the argument, and it's probably something I might say at some point, but I don't know that at my core I truly believe it. So, by the way, while there are some advocates for Drew Lock, there's still quite a few who think that Baker Mayfield is the long-term play here. And so there's some of the same people who were kind of calling out the fact that Russ may be traded. Here's Mike Florio.
I just have a feeling Pete's up to something here. I have a feeling that Pete's trying to bluff the Browns. And I have a feeling that there is kind of a long con that's going on here where the Seahawks are acting like they don't want Baker Mayfield, even though maybe they do. but they know the Browns are desperate. The Browns have no other option.
Yeah.
So they are digging in with the guys they have, and part of that is touting Drew Lock in the hopes of getting, at the end of the day, Baker Mayfield for nothing.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I mean, that's the way my mind works as well, right? That Pete's playing a long con, etc. And by the way, if it doesn't happen and you don't get Baker, what's the worst thing that's happened? You've built up the confidence of Drew Lock, and if these guys aren't good, you draft a quarterback next year in a better class. Like, Pete's actually playing this really well, where almost any of his options are pretty good options. He just has to suffer the indignity of everybody making fun of their quarterback room right
now.
Not
showing their hand, yeah.
Albert Breer, friend of the show, of course, and longtime friend of mine, says that, yeah, it's sort of in the same vein.
I honestly think Seattle would look at it. Now, you know, I don't think that they wanted to fork over draft capital for him and pay him $18 million, but under the right circumstance, I think Pete Carroll wants to create a quarterback competition there. And you look at their draft, and they didn't come away with one, you know. And so, I think Seattle's a place where if you look at how they got Russell Wilson all those years ago, right? Like, it's easy for all of us to sit here and say, well, you know, they took a big swing on a third round pick and they nailed that, you know. But like, the truth is, and I think you and I have talked about this before, they got to Russell Wilson by continually throwing darts.
And they did, right? Charlie Whitehurst and Tavares Jackson. And they brought people in and tried it out to see whether or not it worked until eventually, you know, Matt Flynn, eventually they hit on Russell Wilson. Baker Mayfield's another dart you can throw because he's obviously got a tremendous amount of talent. Will Pete choose to do that if he's released? I think so. I still think there's a very real possibility that if he's released and you don't have to pay the money, that they give it a shot, because I'm not sure there's a tremendous amount of downside there. So, all right, we will talk more about this throughout the course of the morning. I'll ask Brock about it once again. Brock's held steadfast to his view that nothing happens until training camp, but we'll see. Coming up next, Mariners win. Is their luck turning, and how much responsibility do we bear? It's next, Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710 salesports.com.